Hello, everyone, and good afternoon. This is Michael McCurdy from TestyMom.com, and I'd like to welcome you to our teleseminar this afternoon, where we're going to be covering the top questions that we've been asked over the last week. And I also have here with me the Testy Mom herself, Ms. Karen Quinn. Hi, Karen.
Hi. How is everybody today?
Yeah, let's go ahead and jump into this. We have a lot of questions we want to cover, and if you are attending the teleseminar, just you can speak up and ask your questions at the end, or if you have any questions while we're answering questions, let us know. Karen, we're going to start with a few questions for you, and then I will answer a few questions at the end of the teleseminar. We're probably projecting this teleseminar to be 15 to 20 minutes. So we would, again, like to welcome everyone. So the first question that we received this week, Karen, is how do you help a child who is shy around adults warm up when he or she has to meet with a tester and they don't know, and when they have to interview at a particular school where they don't know any other children or the particular teacher?
Well, Michael, the comfort level of a child around adults and other children is a learned behavior. And, of course, that's why we take our kids to little classes and we put them in preschool, because that's how they learn to interact with other kids and be social, and also to be social with their teachers. But some kids find it a little bit harder to be comfortable, especially around adults that they don't know. Now, if your child is going to be tested at preschool, they're going to introduce her to the tester ahead of time, and she's going to see other kids going in to do special work with the teacher. And your nursery school and teacher will make sure that your child is comfortable with the tester that they're going to be using inside of the nursery school. Where this becomes a problem is when your child is going to be tested, let's say they're going to have to go to a testing facility either to take the ERB or to take the OLSAT, and they're going to be with either a psychologist or some sort of proctor who's going to be giving them the test. Now, if one thing I'll say is that psychologists are a little better trained in general to warm up children before they go in for a test. So they really have little tricks up their sleeves, and they know what to do, how to help help a child relax and have fun during the test. You just can't be sure when you're dealing with a proctor that a proctor is going to do that. They might, but they might not. So, there's some things, and we'll talk about some things you can do. One thing with a psychologist, if you know you're going to a psychologist's office, or even if you have a few minutes ahead of time with the psychologist, you can let them know, and you can let the proctor know that your child is a little bit shy and takes some time to warm up. And if they could, talk to them and, help them feel comfortable before they start, you would appreciate that. So you can always, try that. In some cases, a tester might actually let you, sit in the back of the room while your child is tested if they're really, really shy. But no matter what you want to do is you want to make sure your child knows, if you're not going to be in the room, that you're right outside the room. And if they need you, you're there. And, in fact, some testers will allow the child to take a break and come out and see that you're there, see that you're waiting for them. Certainly, I know that happens at the ERB offices, that children are allowed to take little breaks. So just make sure that you stay so that if your child comes out, they see that you are there. Now, when you have a shy child, one thing you want to do is, let's say you're around adults and your child kind of hides behind you or doesn't want to talk. What you don't want to do is say, oh, my son is so shy. He does this all the time. You don't want to call your child shy in front of him, because that kind of gives him an excuse to just continue to behave that way. So don't put a label on him. Just know that this is something he's got to learn to become more comfortable with. So one thing you can do, and we've certainly talked about this before, is walk by the site where your child will be tested and explain to him exactly what's going to happen during the evaluation. Like I said, remind him that you'll be waiting the whole time, and tell him that the tester is a teacher, just like Miss Mary or whatever your child's teacher is called. You might also want to kind of play act what's going to happen going in for a test. Ahead of time, you can kind of play school with your child. However, only do this if you think play acting the situation won't make your child feel more stressed about it, because you don't want to put more stress on the situation. But in some cases with kids, when you play act something, it sort of helps them work it through and they become more comfortable in the real situation. What you want to do is you want to make sure you bring your child into situations where they are able to interact with strangers who are sort of okay, approved strangers in your eyes. So what you want to do is when friends come over, teach your child how to introduce himself and how to make eye contact and even to shake hands. When you're at a restaurant, let your child order for himself. Or let's say you're together at a store and you have a question, let your child ask the question of a store clerk. Or let your child give the money to the cashier. And when you have, let's say, adult friends visiting you, you want to say something to your friend that you're very proud of about your child, and then that gives your friend a chance to ask your child about that, and your child will engage in a conversation about something that hopefully she's very proud of. Another thing you can do is teach your child how to answer the phone and talk to adults that way. That helps build confidence without, you know, having to do it in person, but it gets them comfortable again talking to adults. One thing you want to do is you definitely want to practice shaking hands, especially if you're going to be if your child is going to be interviewing at private schools. Often the director of admissions will reach down and shake your child's hand and introduce herself. So you want your child to know how to respond to that. So you can practice shaking hands, introducing yourself, and making eye contact. And when you and your child are talking to each other, if they're kind of wandering, if their eyes are wandering, what you want to do is just say, "Now I need you to make eye contact with me. I need your ears." You know, you want to say to them, "Pay attention to me when I'm talking to you." So these are some things that you can kind of do, you know, when you're engaged with your child that will make them comfortable both talking to you as an adult and also talking to strange adults that are approved adults that you want them to get comfortable with, because when they have that skill, they're going to do better with a strange tester or also with a teacher who, you know, might be working with them in an interview situation.
Okay, Michael? Great. Those are really good tips.
I just want to make sure you're there.
I'm still here.
I mean, I could talk more, but you said we're supposed to limit this to about 15 minutes, right? I could go on and on about this.
No, I can go on and on as well. So, you know, respecting everyone's time here, but we could talk about this, I know, literally for hours,
right?
So it does sound like, you know, a lot of these things you can just incorporate in your daily life, and it's, you know, things that you can easily do on a daily basis multiple times a day with your child. So it's really, really good insights.
Exactly. It's something you can practice all the time just in the course of daily life. Anytime you find yourself around a strange adult, but you're with your child, that's an opportunity to let him practice talking to an adult he doesn't know and just take advantage of that.
Okay. And the next question here is about school interviews this was more applicable to private schools. We have a lot of requests for private schools here at testingmom.com. The question is, what does my child need to know how to do for a school interview, and how do we prepare?
Well, a lot of different things happen in school interviews, and it just depends on which schools you're interviewing at in terms of what they do. But I'll talk about some of the more typical things that happen. One thing that might very, very well happen is your child will be talking to either an admissions director or a teacher, and they will be asking your child personal questions like, you know, do you have siblings? When's your birthday? What do you like to do when you play? Things like that. So, you know, this is what we were talking about before. Having your child be comfortable talking to an adult is a very good skill for him to have. And so that's something you want to practice in advance. Now, often interviews are done in groups. And when this is the case, what they'll do is they'll lay out all the name tags for all the kids who are expected in that group. And when your child shows up, the person who's sitting there will say, "Can you find your name?" So your child needs to be able to read her name when it's in a bunch of other names. So it's just very important that your child knows how to read her name. And as we talked about before, the director may introduce herself to your child and shake her hand. And so you want to know that your child knows how to do this. And one of the things that I recommend doing is you can actually make a fun game of it with your child and just play a fun game and make up crazy names and introduce yourselves as that person. Like, you know, reach down and say, you know, hello, I'm Mrs. Loopy Von Poopy, and shake your child's hand very firmly. And then your child will really get into that and let him introduce himself as a funny, silly name and shake hands. And he'll get into shaking hands firmly and making eye contact in this funny situation. And then later you transition it over to, now let me hear you introduce yourself with your real name. And by then they'll already know how to shake hands firmly and make eye contact. So start by making it a fun game and then transition it over to really teaching your child how to introduce himself. Now, schools do a lot of different things at interviews. One of the things that they'll do is they might have the kids sit in a circle and the teacher will read to them, and then they'll ask them questions that show whether or not they were listening and to show if they can think. So they might, you know, read a little story and then say, you know, Sarah, why did the main character feel the way he felt? Or Billy, has something like what happened to Joey in the story ever happened to you? So they're really looking to see, did your child listen, and were they paying attention, and how well do they think? They might ask your child to draw something like their home or their family. They'll be watching for pencil grip and how sophisticated the drawings are. They might ask them to draw basic shapes like circles, squares, and triangles. They might set up an area of puzzles or Play-Doh, and they're going to watch the kids and see how well they do and see how well they interact with other children. They might also set up different PlayStations around the room and see what the kids are drawn to, and different teachers will follow them and observe what they're doing and talk to them as they play. If they play a game, they're going to watch and see, did the child follow directions? Did they participate? How well did they enjoy the activity? They might have a snack, and your child would be asked then to help by either, you know, setting the table, pouring juice, or giving out cookies, or helping to clean up. And again, they're going to assess how well your child does. And much of what happens at an interview is very similar to what happens during the day at a preschool. So just by being in preschool, your child is practicing for interviews every single day. Now, there are some schools that will take children on a one-on-one basis and just sit with them and do test-like activities. So this will vary by school as to what they might do. But I know, St. Anne's, for example, and Brooklyn, they'll sit a child down and do activities that are from the Stanford-Binet, for example. So it might be things like, you know, count the little bears or identify colors or test-like activities that you've been practicing every day in your daily test prep questions. So your child should be fine when it comes to that. And that's it. Those are the kinds of things that you want to do to prepare for testing and just relax a little bit, just knowing that just by going to preschool, your child is doing what the kinds of things they do in many interviews every single day.
Yeah, and it sounds like, you know, these are just things you can incorporate in your daily life at home as well.
What'd you say? I'm sorry?
A lot of these things that you were talking about, you can just incorporate in your daily life at home as well.
Yes.
You know, getting ready for breakfast, dinner, lunch, you know, on the weekends, et cetera. The next question here, we get a lot of these questions, Karen. I wanted to get your insights on this. About test stamina. So the question here from a parent was, how do you build up a four-year-old stamina for sitting up to an hour or an hour and a half or more for a test?
Sitting still for a test is definitely a kind of a learned activity. It is certainly harder, I think, for boys than it is for girls. And if your child has trouble doing this, then it's something you want to practice and build up to. And what I would suggest you do is to find an activity that your child already enjoys, you know, whether it's building blocks or listening to a book or playing a game with you, whatever. And do it with him and kind of see how long he sticks with it without getting bored. And kind of establish that as his threshold for patience. And then each week, engage him in that activity or another activity that he really likes, but each week try to increase it by 10 minutes. So maybe like 3 or 4 times a week, do the activity in what he used to be able to do for 30 minutes, try to do it for 40 minutes. And then the next week, try to do it for 50 minutes. And when he's giving you all that extra attention, just be very encouraging about it and praise him for paying attention so well and working so hard at the activity, because kids love to get praise. They work for it. It's free. And they love to get it. And if you praise them, they'll keep trying to do their best and stick with the activity and do it for longer and longer and try to build them up until they can really sit still with you doing an activity for about an hour.
Yeah, especially at 4 or 5 years old, that's a long time.
I know it is. Yeah.
The next question here, Karen, has to do with the Bracken readiness assessment. So the Bracken assesses kids on knowing double-digit numbers. The question is it realistic to expect a four-year-old to know double-digit numbers, and what's the best way to teach our child this?
That's kind of a hard one because the truth of the matter is that a four-year-old really in life does not need to know double-digit numbers. And the only reason that you would care that your child knows double-digit numbers, because you know the Bracken is going to assess these, and to get into a gifted class or an accelerated class, a child is expected to be able to recognize these. So really what you have is like a four-year-old who's expected to really be able to do what a 5 or a 6-year-old is able to do. So this is really, you know, a little more than what we normally would expect a four-year-old to be able to do. But if you want to help your child recognize double-digit numbers, and there are some things you can do that I think would be very helpful. One thing you can do is, you know how you often can find these on the streets or maybe in a educational toy store, is just get a placemat that shows the numbers 0 to 99 on it. And you want to see it where it's counted in tens, you know, 0 to 9 and then 10 to 19, 20 to 29, that kind of thing. So that just like if you have it in front of your child every day, if they see the numbers, that's going to help your child, help them soak those numbers in just a little bit. And you can also make your own if you can't find one, but you want to have a number chart so they see what those numbers look like. Then you can't really expect a child to recognize numbers without understanding what they mean. And so what you want to make sure you're doing is that you're counting and that your child really understands, you know, what does 1 look like? What does 2 look like? And you can count with manipulatives like Cheerios or, you know, goldfish or whatever. And you can count up, you know, 10 goldfish, you know, and literally so they see 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. And then you could put out 10 more and you could show that's what 20 looks like. And when you show them what 20 goldfish look like, then you can write down the number 20. So you want to make sure they really understand what it is to count from 1 to 99 and what 1 to 99 really looks like. Another way to – the thing that's good to use is those, there are Unifix cubes. They're called UNIFIX cubes, and you can buy them online, and you can stack them in tens. You know, and so you can show how, you know, there are 10 little cubes that stack together to make 10. And then the next stick of cubes is 20, and then there's 30 and 40, and yet they're individual little cubes. So, again, that helps children understand what 1 to 99 really, really means. And then, again, you know, when you, let's say if you, you know, if you you show the child what 20 Unifix cubes are, and then you show them 3 more, and then you write the number 23. So you start to show them, make the connection between the actual number of items and what the number actually looks like. And in a city like New York, if you happen to live there, it's easy because you can walk down the street. You can say, let's find 11th Street. Let's find 12th Street. And you look at the street sign and you see what 11 looks like and you can see what 12 looks like. I guess just doing a lot of counting, and then showing what the number actually looks like is a good way to slowly but surely build this skill up. And this is something that's going to take time. You can't do it overnight. You've got to be working on it for a long time. But soon kids figure out the pattern that, 20, 30, 40, 50, they start to figure out that pattern and then they start to be really interested in what those numbers look like, and they really get into the swing of wanting to learn not only to count that high, but to recognize those numbers.
I would say that's it.
Is that how you did it with your daughter? Because I know she did okay on the Bracken on the numbers.
Oh yes, it's just repetitive and doing something every day, and like you were saying. Especially for those people who live in New York or any other city that has numbered streets, it's a perfect opportunity to do counting. Or if you're on the subway, because all the subways here in New York are, letters or numbers, so that is really good practice if you take the subway with your child as well. And one thing also to remember about the Bracken is, unlike the OLSAT, because the OLSAT has different levels, like level A, B, C, and depending on the age of the child, pre-K to K, it's A, and then B, first grade, C, second grade, and so on. The Bracken, your child will be given the same Bracken test, regardless if they're 4 years old or in second grade. So that's something to consider. By the time they get to second grade, your child should be, most children ace the Bracken because it's just a general knowledge test. Mm-hmm. But at four, you have to remember this test is also given to 6 or 7 year olds as well. So your child is being exposed to some concepts that, a lot of four-year-olds haven't been exposed to, some different shapes and three-dimensional shapes as well. So that is something to take into consideration. And it is based upon the age as well. So they're allowed to miss more if they're four and still score, at the 99th percentile, even if they miss some questions. So it's something to remember about the Bracken.
Great.
All right, and let's see here. I think that was it for your questions. I had a couple of questions we're going to cover real quick over the next couple of minutes. We've been getting some questions from parents who have applied to Hunter, which, if you're not familiar with the Hunter Gifted and Talented program here in New York City, it's a gifted and talented program that's only eligible to Manhattan residents here in New York City, and it's very, very competitive, and it's very difficult to get into. And it's a free program. There's no tuition cost, but it's not necessarily part of the gifted and talented public education system. And they only allow 50 students every year into the kindergarten program at Hunter. So one of the questions that we received is, what's the cutoff when somebody to get to the second interview at Hunter? So Hunter has two different parts to it. The first one is every child who applies to Hunter will have to take the Stanford-BINET-5 test, which is given by a psychologist. And based upon the score of that, Hunter will invite children back for a second round of interview, which is a group setting at Hunter, where they can see how the child interacts with other students in a group setting, how the child follows directions, et cetera. So over the last few years, the test scores to get into Hunter have ranged anywhere from a 142 to a 148. So in that range, that has been the cutoff, anywhere from 142 to 148. If your child scores a 150 or above, very high probability they will get invited back for a second interview at Hunter. If they score in the 140s, it's just wait and see at this point. So it's something that, you will be notified by Hunter if your child is invited back for a second interview, or you'll be notified that your child isn't going to be invited back. Anything below a 140, unfortunately, usually does not make the cutoff at Hunter, at least in recent years. So that's something to take into consideration if you're going through the Hunter process over the next few months. Karen, did you have anything to add to that?
No, I think that's great, because a couple of people have had their kids score in the early 140s and they've wondered, you know, am I going to be called back? And I think, like you said, at this point, it's just wait and see, because every year the numbers are a little bit different. It just depends on the group of kids that take the test.
And the next question, we get a lot of these questions over multilingual children. So if your child speaks multiple languages, you know, how is that going to impact the test? What do you suggest as a child goes into a testing situation? One thing to remember if your child is pre-K, the best thing to do is what language does your child usually, you know, if they go to a pre-K, what language is spoken in the classroom? And that's usually the type of language that if the child's very comfortable with English, if they're in an English-speaking pre-K and they learn in that environment and they're doing well in that environment, then most likely the English portion of the OLSAT should be sufficient and your child shouldn't have any problems as long as they are fluent and understanding English. One thing to consider, your child doesn't necessarily have to speak during the OLSAT. All they have to do is point at four to the correct answer on the OLSAT. So there's really no verbal interaction needed. I mean, they can say things, but it's not necessary that they need to be able to verbalize the answer to the test proctor. They will just be instructed to point to the answer. So your child needs to know the language, to take instructions, that they're taking instructions in the best. So one thing to consider is, you know, is your child started reading? If they have started reading, are they currently reading in English or are they currently reading in another language? Are you doing a mix of both? One thing just to really consider is, you know, how comfortable do you think your child is in English versus the other language? And, you know, and really trying to, you know, you can, if you have, you know, a friend who speaks the second language, if it's Spanish, you know, have your friend give instructions in Spanish and see how your child does, or have another friend maybe give instructions in English. And maybe, you know, if your child's already in school, ask the teacher what they think. Tell the teacher that you're going to be taking your child to get tested and tell the teacher, you know, we have the option in this case, Spanish or English. What would you suggest? And usually teachers won't know because they're, you know, interacting with your child in a learning environment. So they will probably be more than happy to help you out as well. The main thing is just to make sure your child's comfortable and whatever language you decide to take the OLSAT or Bracken in, make sure your child can take direction well on that language. And that would be my advice on that. Karen, did you have anything else to add?
Yeah, I was just going to say that if you're speaking both languages in the home and you've got some time, but you know, between now and the time your child will be tested, and you decide, let's say you're speaking Spanish and English, but you decide we're going to have her tested in English, you might, between now and the time she's tested, really step up your use of English at home and realize that you can go back to doing both just as soon as the test is over, just so that they get more used to whatever language they're going to take the test in. And, you know, vice versa, if you're speaking both in English and Spanish at home, they're going to be tested in Spanish, really step up your use of Spanish so your child is even more used to hearing that language, because that'll just make them a little bit more comfortable when getting the directions and being able to respond more easily.
Okay, great. That's it for our teleseminar today, and we appreciate you, everyone attending. And if you have any questions over the next week, please email us. You can email Karen at karen@testingmom.com or myself, Michael, M-I-C-H-A-E-L, @testingmom.com or help@testingmom.com. Karen, any final words?
Nope. Just looking forward to any more questions you have this week, and we'll make sure we cover them next week.
All right, great. Thanks, everyone.